Bubba Wallace here from 2311 Racing. On the track, my car's look is everything. But today, I'm talking about more than just paint schemes. I'm talking about my favorite games at Chumba Casino. Check out exclusives like Stampede Fury and my own King Croc Fury. It's just as wild as my car looked in Texas. With over 200 games and new ones weekly, play for free at ChumbaCasino.com. Let's Chumba.
Sponsored by Chumba Casino. No purchase necessary. VGW Group. Void where prohibited by law. 21 plus. Terms and conditions apply.
The great thing about Atlas Butler is they do it all. Heating, cooling, plumbing. Look, I'm busy with work. I don't have time to wait around or deal with lots of people. One company, one call, and they do it all. Wonder if they'll clean out my inbox. Seriously, offer that service. Please.
Atlas Butler is at your service. Call 1-800-FURNACE.
Caroline, Willie, D-Maze, 102.5-106.3, The Game and The Game Nashville app. We are live from the Hiller Plumbing, Heating, Cooling, and Electrical Game Studios, and we are streaming live on Twitch, Twitter, YouTube, and Facebook Live every single day. Our video streaming is brought to you by Superbook. Download their app today and use promo code THEGAME. And hey, we are live out here at SEC Media Days, day two, at the Grand Hyatt in downtown Nashville. It's so fun having SEC Media Days in our city. Mm-hmm. And our SEC Media Days coverage is sponsored by Volunteer Hose and Gasket and Mercedes-Benz of Music City. Appreciate Paul Feinbaum from the SEC Network joining us in our last segment. And one thing that we touched on with Paul was one thing that really stuck out to me in Greg Sankey's time at the podium yesterday when he went on a long and kind of drawn-out speech about NIL and how he plans and other leaders across college football, leaders and coaches and commissioners, plan to kind of, so to speak, put the toothpaste back in the tube a little bit. I don't think that any of us can deny that NIL has gotten out of control. But what can you really do about it? Greg Sankey discussed this yesterday at the podium.
The reality is only Congress can fully address the challenges facing college athletics. The NCAA cannot fix all of these issues. The courts cannot resolve all of these issues. The states cannot resolve all of these issues, nor can the conferences. Whether congressional action is achievable is a matter of debate. Much debate. But educational opportunity, supporting equitable opportunities for men and for women, ensuring the United States continued success in the Olympic Games, providing medical care, nutritional support, academic support, mental wellness counseling. These are nonpartisan issues.
And that was Greg Sankey at the podium yesterday. Says the only thing that can fix all of these issues of NIL just spiraling out of control is negotiating with Congress. Where it stands right now, individual states can make up whatever NIL laws they'd like. I mean, Texas has taken advantage of that, where they have said, hey, we are going to put right into Texas law that the NCAA cannot place sanctions or violations on Texas public universities for taking advantage of NIL rules. Missouri wrote into law that they now allow coaches to negotiate with NIL entities for athletes' deals. That is not allowed under NCAA law, but the law of the land allows it. I get it. I view Sankey's point of view, and Nick Saban and Brian Kelly both went with Greg Sankey to Washington, D.C. to demand some sort of change, some standardization across all 50 states rather than just each individual state. But well, how do you get there?
You're not.
Yeah.
Not going to get
there's,
there.
There's something that's the you can do thing. Because to my thing is this. I don't want our Congress wasting time on an issue that the NCAA should have handled a long time ago. Now it's like all of a sudden you didn't handle it. Now you want to say, well, let's take it to Congress now because we didn't do what we were supposed to do. Y'all should have, this thing, like Paul said, and we've all known this, this thing has been in the pipelines for the last decade. Go back to the O'Bannon case, if many people are not familiar with it. Ed O'Bannon and his brother, who played for UCLA's basketball team, their championship team, they made the video game the basketball video game, and the players got no residuals from it at all. So they were fighting to try to get money from, I think it was EA Sports.
Right.
Because their likeness was on this video game. So they had been fighting this 2 decades ago. So the NCAA knew that this was coming, and they chose to just, you know, bury their heads in the sand and not do anything about it. So fast forward 2 decades later, now you've allowed this NIL deal to sort of get out of hand, and now you want to try to put it on Congress to fix it? I don't want Congress to fix it. It's not Congress' deal to fix it. Congress' deal is to help run the country. This has nothing to do with the country.
But,
this has everything to do with college.
But couldn't you say that about the Texas state legislature, the Missouri state?
Yeah.
Their job shouldn't be to help Texas win football. You know that, but that's.
But it is.
But no, some of them are motivated by that.
But certain states, we know how they feel about football. California, Texas, Florida.
But it's messing stuff up. It messes stuff up for the league, though.
Absolutely.
So that's the thing. Is I agree with you 100%, but it's already being done on the state level. And so now, if you're Greg Sankey, you're trying to figure out, how do I make this work just for my league? Forget about the entire country. I'm just trying to make it fair for the teams in my league. And you got a big geographical footprint with the SEC, and it's growing all the time.
Right. And it I understand that this probably isn't and shouldn't be Congress's number one priority. But you're getting to a point where certain states have very obvious advantages in this NIL world because of what they are doing at the state level, because of what Texas wrote into Texas state law, what Missouri has done. California is one of those states where high school students can start earning NIL money. That gives California public schools a much greater advantage than, let's say, Oregon, where you can't do that.
Well, so change the laws.
That's what they're trying to do on a federal level.
Well,
because what you're going to continue to do is when each individual states change their laws to reflect the similar laws of nearby states, well, then they'll just change it again. And we'll just change it again. And now it's getting completely out of control that, you know, middle schoolers are making millions and millions of dollars because of each individual state trying to compete with one another, when if you just standardize it across all 50 states, that this is NIL law. This is not Texas NIL law. This is not Tennessee NIL law. This is not Alabama NIL law. It is just NIL law. I think it makes each individual public institution's jobs so much easier, and it creates just a little bit of an element of no more this is the wild, wild west. Because right now it is. You can do whatever you want.
And you're
and that's
right.
A scary place to be.
You're right
and
about
it's not
that.
Transparent
but,
either. It's all secretive.
No, it's not transparent. Yeah.
But the thing is that If a kid 10 years old invents something that everybody in the world needs, we ain't capping that 10-year-old and telling him, whoa, you can only make a certain amount of money.
It's not a cap.
You can't. No, but what I'm saying is this. You can't regulate how much these, because in no other profession is Congress trying to regulate how much money an individual can make.
They're not regulating how much individual players can make. That's what the Supreme Court made very, very, very clear. You will not put a cap. This is capitalism. You cannot put a cap on how much people money.
I don't think you can have.
It's about laws.
But you can't have a, other than ethical guidelines, I understand ethical guidelines being in place. But other than that, you can't have a guideline saying, well, you over here can only make this amount of money because this state over here don't have the resources that you have.
And that's what's happening.
Well, find the resources. Figure it out. It's a capitalistic world. Figure it out. These kids should have been getting paid a long time ago.
I agree with you on that.
And now they have the opportunity to get paid. And what is happening, the schools that are not able to give the money or not willing to give the money, now they're complaining. Oh, my goodness, there needs to be a cap, or not necessarily a cap, but there needs to be guidelines on how much money we can give. And no.
It's not guidelines on how much money they can give. Uh-huh. It's guidelines about laws. Because you cannot touch how much an individual player makes. If there's an NIL
But what law are you going to put in place? Name me a law.
It's the same thing as federal law. Like, you can't drink and drive. That's federal law.
Okay, but what I'm saying is that what laws are you going to put in place for this situation? Give me a law other than saying, well, you can only make a certain amount of money. What other laws? Well, is there going to be a law that says, well, if I am a student in Tennessee, mm-hmm. then a guy that's not in Tennessee, that's in another state, he can't pay me for an NIL deal?
That's not it. They can still get paid for any NIL deals that they would like, and they can get paid however much they're willing
to make.
But I'm
saying, what rules are you putting in place?
I'll use the example. Uh-huh. Texas, and this is from an article in The Athletic that had a great breakdown of what Greg Sankey had to say uh-huh. about NIL. It says, let me find it really quickly, a law in Texas signed in May outlines ways that athletes can profit off of their name, image, and likeness, and their schools can help them. It includes a clause that prohibits the NCAA or its conferences to punish schools that take advantage of the rights under Texas law. That is a Texas law, and mm-hmm. it gives Texas a very obvious and clear advantage within NIL. So I guess, you know, standardizing and making these laws federal, that's either a thing for every state or it's not a thing for any state.
Well, if they haven't gotten the abortion thing right, you think they care about this? You think they're going to get this right? I'm just being honest. We got certain laws about abortion in certain states, and that is not sort of a federal law. Mm-hmm. You know, every law, yeah. every state has their own law. They haven't gotten this right yet. You think they're gonna get this right?
And you're right. It really shouldn't come down to the law.
Exactly.
What you're looking for. Let's just take the SEC. Forget about how the SEC would compare to the Big Ten or whatever. But you just want it to be. You try to set up a league where everybody is playing by the same rules, mm-hmm. and you can't do that right now because the law in Texas is different than the law in Missouri, different than Tennessee, than Florida, mm-hmm. and that is a problem, right? Just from a competitive balance, trying to make
but
the rules the same.
But there's never been a competitive balance.
There is no such thing as parity in college football. However, there are rules across all of college football. Every team gets 85 scholarships.
Uh-huh.
Every team gets a certain number of recruiting visits. Mm-hmm. Every team gets a certain number of whatever. Alabama is always going to have more money and resources than Fresno State. Mm-hmm. But at least at a certain level, everyone is operating under similar rules and similar circumstances.
Yeah, that's the goal in all this, right? Is you're just trying to have everybody going about it the same way. Because here's the thing with the NIL that is coming. The coaches, I don't know how many really want to deal with it or don't want to deal with it, but it would be nice if you could sort of control the money. You're not supposed to be able to work with the collectives, right? You're not supposed to know what the collectives are doing. Mm-hmm. But the Texas law has kind of given them that avenue mm-hmm. in doing that, right? They can almost organize it where you're not supposed to really be able to organize it, right? It's not supposed to be direct pay for play. But the Texas law sort of gives Texas the ability
right.
to directly influence the pay for play. We can say Johnny's making $2 million, Derek's making $50,000, Caroline's making $30,000. Like mm-hmm. they could organize that a lot easier with that law. Fair to say? That's
Fair.
The advantage.
And I think that if you are, let's say, let me pick a random state that I have no idea what their NIL laws are like. Idaho, and the Idaho head coach is really
don't even have it.
Trying. I don't even know if they do have a college football program, but work with me here. The head coach at Idaho is really trying to build up the program. He believes in it. He wants to make a bowl game, to get to a college football playoff. He wants to build up his program. Well, if the Idaho laws put him at an obvious disadvantage, then you can be the greatest coach in the world. But when Texas is over here, where the NIL laws are all kind of willy-nilly, you're never going to be able to bridge that gap. And I don't think that we want to live in a college football world where coaches that live in states that just so happen to have very lenient NIL laws have an advantage of other good programs with good coaches and good players, but they just can't bridge that gap.
Well, listen, that's the reality. There's never, ever been parity in college. Maybe when the first colleges start playing football.
And there still won't be parity.
There will never be this sort of sense of everybody's on a level playing ground from a money standpoint. There will never be. There will always be the haves and the have-nots. So, to me, the NCAA, one, I don't think they're going to do anything to it. They're going to let it stay the way it is. And as a citizen, I don't want Congress of any kind addressing this, because this is not Congress's problem. It's not their problem. They didn't create it. They shouldn't have any business being in it. This is something that the NCAA has created, and now they're asking somebody else to fix it.
Well, technically it is, because the Supreme Court made NIL legal.
But what I'm saying is this. The NCAA had an opportunity to fix this. They had an opportunity to slow play this and get it sort of the way they wanted to.
Agree the NCAA with has never done anything right.
Exactly. Yeah. So now, again, now they're saying, well, the milk is out of the carton. So now here, Congress, you clean it up.
Bail us out.
You clean it up. You got a big towel. You clean it up. And as a taxpayer, no. They shouldn't have anything to do with this.
Let's continue the conversation coming up next. Caroline Willie and D-Mace is brought to you by Zen Sports. Start earning cash rewards on your bets today. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-889-9789. Terms and conditions apply. Must be 21 or older and in Tennessee to bet. 1025-1063 the game.
And they moved on to other things. This is not – and by the way, how are you going to go to Congress and say, we're not going to – they went home.
The NCAA is irrelevant. Is that – a bad thing for college sports?
No, it doesn't matter anymore. They had a chance to do something about NIL for the last 10 years. I mean, this is not a new issue. Everybody's been complaining about it. And the reason why they didn't do anything, because they were afraid of going to court, because they didn't have a leg to stand on. They were on a losing streak. I sat with the new president of the NCAA a couple weeks ago in Washington, and he got up in front of this organization. I'd spoken right before him, and he said the NCAA blew it on NIL. I'm like going, you're the head of the NCAA. But at the time, he was the governor of Massachusetts. But they can't fix this. I won't go political here, but you're going to Congress. Congress doesn't care about this issue. That was a one-day thing for them. Everybody got a selfie with Nick Saban, and they went home, and they moved on to other things. This is not – and by the way, how are you going to go to Congress and say, we're not going to allow young people – who have an opportunity to make money. We're gonna curtail that. I sat with Tommy Tuberville last year in his office in Washington. He said, we got to put a cap on them. I go, you're going to put a cap on what somebody can make? I mean, that's absurd, and it will not work.
That was Paul Feinbaum. Appreciate him for joining our show last hour. And he makes a fair point. Like, Congress doesn't care about this. Congress doesn't care about your college football team. But my question is, what's the alternative? If you keep moving forward how you're going with NIL, the states decide their own individual NIL laws, does it get to a point where it's unsustainable? Or we just move forward like usual and the rich get richer, maybe the small get smaller?
I think you just Paul is right. Listen, Congress got bigger issues to tackle. And maybe that was just their day to get their selfie with Nick Saban or Kirby Smart or whoever else and sort of pelt them with some hard questions. But then after that, it's like, okay, we're done with it. We did what we were supposed to do, and now we got to move on. NCAA, Sankey, y'all handle this. We did what we needed to do. We put them on Front Street. We had them answer questions. And if y'all want to go back and watch the video of it, and nitpick it, then do that's y'all business, but we're done with it. So I don't think this thing ever gets resolved to a point that everybody's going to be satisfied. College sports has always been, since I've been watching it, the haves and the have not. Those who are on TV, those that are not on TV. Mm-hmm. Those that are getting the five stars and those that are not getting the five stars. And that was way before the NIL deal. You think it's going to change? There's always going to be, even if they sort of, quote, unquote, made it a level playing field. You know who that does help? It helps the big wigs.
Yeah.
It still helps them.
It's not going to be a level playing field. But I think what you're hoping for is to have a system that everybody sort of understands of the guidelines. That way, if you want to be the maverick or the renegade that goes outside the lines, then everybody can try to react accordingly, right? There were checks and balances. Like Tim made a good point when he was on. Like you want to have at least some guidelines,
right?
Because what's happening a lot is kids are being promised something for NIL. But there's nobody policing and looking and saying, okay, you promised this kid X and he didn't get it. You exploited that kid. But who's policing that? Who's looking out for the kid? there. Like, if this
that's
is all
that we don't talk about
that's,
enough.
That's part of it, right?
It's like that Jaden Rashada, the kid that committed to Florida because I believe it was like a $13 million NIL deal. He signs his letter of intent, and Florida turns around and says, actually, sorry, no, we don't have the money. So who's holding Florida accountable?
Right, because the way it's set up is that Florida is not really the one that's like that. That's what Florida said. Like, wait, that wasn't us, man. That was these collectives that you were working with. We can't control the collectives. But there's the other side of it where, you know, secretly the coach is working.
Secretly.
They are you're supposed to. Yeah. You're not supposed to directly be working with the collectives. But we know that that's shaky, right?
Collective advertisements.
So how do we get through that? Like, how do we get, at least as a league, an understanding of what we think is okay, ethically, the word ethically before, and what's not? We can't worry about what Congress is not going to figure this out. There's no way.
No, they're not.
But we try to, amongst the community of coaches, of schools, say this is what we think is the right system?
You know, there's
then it's up to each student. You want to spend $5 million on players, $10 million on players? That's up to you guys, and it's going to be – there's no cap there.
Well, there always has to be sort of this – the test dummy to everything. And maybe the Rashada – is it Rashada?
Jaden Rashada.
Jaden Rashada was the test – sort of test project, the project for everybody moving forward, meaning, okay, you promised this huge deal, and – I went along with it based on what you said and what you promised, and it sort of was not even a handshake deal. It was just sort of I took you at good faith because this is more money than I've ever seen, so I'm jumping at it. $13 million. Oh, my goodness, I signed with Florida. He signed with Florida, and what happened?
It all went away.
Well, now the next person coming along, they see it and say, you know what, unless you give me a contract and I sign that contract, big company, I'm not committing. I'm only committing with people that I sign a contract with, like a binding contract. You can't get out of this contract. I hope that's what these young men and women and their families are doing moving forward. Like, I am not committing to you unless I sign a contract and you give me a signing bonus. I go there then. I'm obligated to go now. But if it's just some handshake or some verbal agreement, no, I'm not going.
And then you start to get into the weeds of, do college players want to form a players union? Do you want to sign a CBA? I don't think they want to get into that. I don't think they want to be employees of the university.
Well, the university don't want them to be employees. Yeah. The players will probably do it, but the university doesn't want that.
Right. And so that's when you kind of get into the weeds of the specifics of the contract language and the legal language.
But that's separate from forming a union. That's each individual player, man or woman, deciding that based upon the information that they're getting from their parents, from whoever's helping negotiate this contract, a lawyer, or I don't know if they can get an agent, but let's just say a lawyer that deals in contracts.
They can have agents.
Okay, well, an agent. That's up to them to work it out. If y'all get the numbers right, just like free agency, y'all get the numbers right, I sign that, and I go to that university. Because if I don't go now is a breach of contract. Now we can sue you. But if I sign that contract, I go to Tennessee, and then you decide not to pay me, that's a breach of contract.
Well, then what happens if that player decides to transfer?
Then the money goes away. The money goes away.
But you see what I'm saying is both sides kind of have to protect themselves.
Yeah, I understand that. Yeah. But other than that, it's like, what can they do?
It's an individual.
It's based on each individual's experience.
Well, let's get into your thought, Willie, coming up next. Kind of the other side of that. We'll get into that coming up next. Caroline, Willie, D-Mays, 102.5, 106.3 The Game. A big part of Greg Sankey's, for lack of a better word, filibuster yesterday was on NIL and how there needs to be federal involvement in NIL and standardizing NIL laws across the country, not state by state. Do you think that's possible? And is that the right approach to, let's say, putting the toothpaste back into the tube?
Well, I would say this. What he's saying about it being different state to state is a massive problem, because what that does is it allows some schools to be heavily involved in assisting guys getting NIL deals, right? And they can be both good and bad, but the school can be very involved in helping. And I know some schools that are exactly that way. Then there are other states where the schools cannot be involved at all. Like they really can't. And so what's happening is somebody outside the school, an alum, someone that has a passion for the university, is kind of heading it up so the schools can't do it. So now it's something that's like completely out of the jurisdiction of an athletic department at a university. And look, in some ways that can be good, but in some ways that can be really, really bad. And so when you have schools kind of competing on a different playing field with that, that ultimately is a problem. And look, I think it's clear that the NIL has turned into not what it was intended to do. But I also think in this country, if people are willing to pay guys, in some cases literally to do nothing, I don't know how you take that away from them. And so in terms of some of the oversight with it, you know, I don't know how that happens. But I will say this, just even from a player perspective of the guys getting paid, you know, there does need to be let me back up. I think there's going to start to be some issues, and we've already seen some, where people are promised, you know, a payment on something and don't get it.
That was Tim Hasselbeck, ESPN NFL analyst. And look, I agree with him that NIL very rapidly has turned into something that I don't think anyone intended it to be. But you're not going to take it away from them. You cannot cap the amount of money that college football players can make. And I think that the more rules you add, you open up yourself to more rules being broken. But we've been discussing NIL because Greg Sankey said that Congress is the only entity that can fix this. But Willie, you had a thought before the break.
Yeah, this is just another in a series of reasons why I don't think it's really up to Congress, shouldn't be up to Congress. When you really get down to it, okay, of all the people that play college sports, men and women, what percentage of those athletes are really getting big-time game-changing money? Like, the way NIL is supposed to work, the ideal behind it was, okay, you know, Derek's a good, solid player. Derek deserves to make a little extra money. Derek works a little deal with the local pizza joint. He gets paid $1,000 a week or $1,000 a month even. That'd be great. You know, a little extra money. You got spending money on campus. You can go home. You got a little extra thing to work with for all the work you put in as an athlete. That's how it should work, and hopefully that's what will happen over time naturally for a lot of players. But where you get into this real arms race for the top players, really that's what it's affecting. It's affecting the teams. That's who's concerned about it, the teams that are trying to get to the playoffs in college football. Like in basketball, one or two guys that you buy could be a huge game changer and could, you know, change the entire conference race, right? One player you pilfer off of another team. What, you keep him from going pro. You know, that's the kind of thing. But in the grand scheme of things, Congress can't worry about that. We're talking about 1% of the entire amount of kids that are playing college sports. So we need to get past that discussion. It's not going to happen. It's like, what do the schools decide is the way to go? And look, take Middle Tennessee and Austin Peay and Belmont. They're not in this game very much, right? So what do they worry about? What they worry about is somebody taking one of their players. You know, when they get a really special player, they're vulnerable to having them taken away.
Yeah,
so that needs to be the discussion, but right? It's what's right, what's the best thing for the kids, and what's the best thing for college athletics as a whole?
Well, I go back to, well, if you can fix things from an ethical standpoint, then do what you need to do from an ethical standpoint.
I don't know how many ethics are floating around college sports.
Exactly, I know, but you know, if you're going to change something, you try to figure that out. But my thing is, even if you make a uniform rule in regards to, you know, how schools can conduct themselves, you know, in regards to paying, you know, bringing an outside booster pay and whatnot. Those schools, the Austin Peays, the MTSUs, or any other teams that are in that category or right above that category, they're still going to be left out. It's still going to be the haves and have-nots. It doesn't change that it doesn't change that aspect about college sports. There's always has been the haves and have-nots. There are always going to be the haves and have-nots, no matter how you try to sort of make it a even playing ground. I was quotations, people. So.
Yeah, there's always going to be the Alabamas and the Georgias and the Floridas and the USCs and the Texases. Those are always going to exist in congruence with smaller schools around the country that just simply cannot compete. That will always exist. You're never going to take that away. But I go back to every team's got the same number of scholarship players. Every team's got the same number of allotted recruitment visits. You know, let's say if Alabama got 100 scholarship players versus Austin Peay, who gets 50. I mean, that's a very clear and obvious disadvantage to an Austin Peay. So I think the NCAA has created at least enough of kind of the same rules. Why can't NIL be any different?
I also struggle with this. In the grand scheme of things, it's really nice to make an extra few grand per year.
Absolutely.
But if you're an athlete and you're chasing 10 grand as opposed to 5 grand or 20 grand as opposed to 10 grand, it's very short-sighted, right? And the players that can really demand a million, 2 million, let's just say a million or more,
there's
the quarterbacks,
those
players should be thinking bigger as well. You should be thinking about, hey, if you're making a million in college, unless you're just like, you know, a game manager on an unbelievably good team and you're not going to play in the pros, your vision should be, how do I make the big NFL contract? You know, that's your dream anyway, right? You're not going to really get life-changing money in most cases. Maybe a couple of quarterbacks at the right school will, but those quarterbacks are a much better chance of being the Trevor Lawrence, the Joe Burrow. Those are the kind of guys that are going to get that kind of money anyway. So that from the kid's standpoint, I just think sometimes we get a little too tied up in this as well. I'm looking at it more of as a competitive balance. And so to try to be on the same page where everybody understands how this should work, and it maybe just has to work out naturally with no rules until everybody it sort of finds its level.
I think it will.
It maybe takes 5 years or 10 years.
I think it'll work itself out. I don't think trying to insert Congress and try to have Congress clean up a mess that you've created, it's not going to work. Because Congress don't want to touch it now. And, you know, you and I spoke, Caroline, off air. It's like, to me, it's going – if you allow Congress to sort of get their hands in this, it's going to end up becoming a political football. That's what it's going to be. If it already isn't in certain states, it's just going to become a political football from a national standpoint. And I don't want that in my sports. I don't want it – I don't want football – men's basketball, women basketball, sports period to become a sort of a platform for elected officials.
Isn't football already political?
Not from a Congress standpoint, I don't think it is.
Because we've already got individual state legislatures making laws at an individual level.
But that's from an individual level. I'm talking about from a national level. I don't even want them to be a part of it from an individual, from a state to state level, but it's happening. I don't want then my Congress to say, well, now we're going to make this a political football. Now we're going to make this a part of our speech as we go from state to state and try to cater our message to whatever state we're in. I don't want it to become like that. I don't want it to become that. We got enough of that going around already.
615-737-1025 is our phone number. We'll get into your thoughts on that because we've got some texts in our text line. Plus, 1025 and 1063 of the game has your chance to win tickets to Misfits Boxing X-Series 008 boxing matches at the Nashville Municipal Auditorium this Saturday. Text in the keyword boxing, B-O-X-I-N-G, to the game text line at 615-737-1025 now to enter. 1025-1063 of the game.
I had these discussions over the years with us about Vanderbilt. I'm curious, with Clark Lee going this morning, you know, he's here in the same town. He's able to show people what they're doing. You know, the shovels in the ground, the cranes all over there, the new commitment. It's a slow approach, but it does look like he's making some progress. Give us your thoughts as you hear him talk about his vision.
When I first heard him talk, I thought he was clueless. I mean, I thought, you know, who is this guy? They picked off from Central Casting, but I love the guy. Now, I saw him a little bit a while ago. His father came up to me, and we were talking earlier. And, I mean, he is really the real thing. And I think he's shown tremendous progress. I mean, that two-week stretch last year, 8 days when they beat Kentucky in Florida.
Yeah,
I mean, the Florida people still can't get over it. But Florida better get over it, because right now I think Vanderbilt might be ahead of them in the pecking order.
That's pretty crazy. Paul, before we let you go, let's circle back to Tennessee. The question's been asked a lot this week.
Uh-huh. He didn't tell you?
Caroline, Willie, D-Mays, 125-106.3, the game and the game Nashville app. That was Paul Feinbaum on our show earlier. Clark Lee was absolutely crazy when he first saw him talk. What?
No, the chair was telling me something. Yeah, go ahead.
Thought Clark Lee was crazy. But Paul Feinbaum said, hey, he's actually doing a pretty good job. And there's an article on ESPN.com written by Pete Thamel. The headline is, Clark Lee is building something real at Vanderbilt. Willie, from your perspective, how long has it been since you felt a sort of such pride in your coach and the future of what Vanderbilt holds?
Well, look, James Franklin did some pretty remarkable things in 3 years. I mean, that was, I think, a game changer in that atmosphere at the time, where a lot of people didn't think you could win 9 games. Mm-hmm. 9 games at Vanderbilt, come on.
Yeah.
Like, Bobby Johnson worked his tail off to have 1 year where they scratched out a bowl game at 6-5 or 6-6, and they won the bowl game against Boston College to go 7-6. I'll never forget that. I thought, oh, man, this is amazing. I watched 26 years of never making a bowl game. James Franklin completely changed what the standard can be.
The perception of Vanderbilt.
Absolutely.
Football, for sure.
And then Derek Mason, you know, he dipped right away, and that put him behind the eight ball. But to his credit, thankfully he found a diamond in the rough quarterback in Kyle Shurmur, a couple of really good players that he put around him. He didn't have as good a success as Franklin and the consistency. But, hey, he beat Tennessee a few times. They went to some bowl games. You'd have taken that every time compared
to
Watson Brown's struggles and Jerry DiNardo and, you know, Woody Woodenhofer. I love the guy to death, but, man, they were so far from where it is. Mm-hmm. So Clark Lee, he saw that. He played for Bobby Johnson, right? He grew up in this town. So I think he has the vision. But what he wants, I think, is a little more of the foundation. I think he's also got the backing that those previous coaches never got on the level that they're getting right now. So that's what I like of what I'm seeing here. And we're just scratching the surface, hopefully, of what he's going to do. He hasn't gotten even to where Derek Mason got yet, but he hasn't been there very long.
But well, I think the belief that he can get there and maybe even further is important.
Yeah, it may be tougher to do now in this next era
with
Texas and Oklahoma coming in.
You have to, I think, in order for people to buy in, they have to see the vision. They have to see that it's attainable. I think James Franklin showed that, hey, if we put some things together the way we need to, if we, you know, make an emphasis on our athletics the way other teams are, or other universities are able to do in SEC, then we will reap the rewards from it. We may not win an SEC championship, but we will be a team that's consistently, for us, going to a bowl game. And that's what you want. They saw it could be done with James Franklin. Derek Mason did it a few years. They end up it just falling off the rails. And now what Clark Lee is doing is showing that, hey, listen, I've seen that this university can do it. Now we just need to back it. And from hiring a new AD, getting a new coach, he has the backing now that he can go out and say to recruits, like, this is what we're doing at Vandy. Vandy is no longer just a school that all we care about is academics, which is great, but we are a school that's going to take pride in what we do on an athletic field.
That's what I think he has a really good vision for, is he wants to produce players that go to the NFL. He also wants to produce a lot of players that have a great college experience on a successful team, enjoy their time there. They have a better facility around them. and then they go off into the world and they have a good network and a good pathway to be successful, right? He thinks about all of these layers, and that's what I really like. And now he can turn. This is what Thamel's article is about a lot. It's not just the talk, right? He can say, now take a look at the stadium right now. It's blown up in the end zone. We're building stuff. There's going to be an athletic village. There's going to be stuff that, remember a few years ago, you know, a really important guy in this SEC media universe that we're living in this week, Jordan Rodgers.
Yeah.
He played for James Franklin on good Vanderbilt teams. Mm-hmm. But he's been hesitant to talk about how great he thinks Vanderbilt can be. He was critical of where it went after James Franklin and before Clark Lee. But now it's going to be easier for somebody like Jordan to say, hey, look, I'm seeing the commitment that I've been calling for, because he knows what it takes to hang in there with Alabama and hang in there with Georgia. You know, maybe not beat them every year, but if those programs are down a little bit and Vanderbilt's got their stuff together, you knock off a couple of teams each year that you're not supposed to beat. I think that's what you're trying to get to, and that's what James Franklin's teams were doing. They got good enough to where if you want a powerhouse in the league, Vanderbilt was going to sneak up and get you.
Shovel in the ground is at least progress. Absolutely. That's going to do it for us
Backing
today.
Backing of the commissioner, the chancellor,
yeah.
$600 million Vanderbilt, Vandy United is what they call it. It's real.
That's going to do it for us today. We'll be back tomorrow, day three of SEC Media Days. Stillman & Company is up next.
Speed love and love on your people. Peace.
Hey, it's Ryan Seacrest here, and if you're looking for some serious fun, head over to ChumbaCasino.com. At Chumba Casino, you can play all your favorite social casino-style games for free anytime, anywhere. It's the most fun you can have on your phone or computer.
No purchase necessary. VGW Group. Void where prohibited by law. See terms and conditions. 21+.